broadcasting from the pulpit of Sports Radio in Boston, it's Sunday Mass with Christian Arcan on WEEI.
He sets, he throws, and a drive into deep left field. This thing is crushed. It's at the track. It's at the wall. It is gone. Raffy, an opposite field homer off of Bayo, and it is 3-0 Giants. It was a fastball, and Raffy rode it the other way. His first Giant home run gives them a 3-run lead.
Good morning. Welcome in. It's the Reverend Arcan. This is Sunday Mass. Nice to have you with us here on WEEI, Boston Sports Original. As I am not actually in Boston right now, I'm up in parts unknown, enjoying my weekend, but taking some time out here on this Sunday to, well, basically, this is how I'm treating these next 3 hours. And we're not just going to talk Red Sox and Devers the entire time. We're going to do a good chunk of that, but not the entire show. Because this is the last game. This is it. This is the last game where this is going to be such a hot topic. It may reemerge at some point later on in the season. Red Sox go on a losing streak. There's something like that. You know, they're getting bumped in and out of that last wild card spot. They're struggling there. Something happens. Another guy gets injured. Oh, I wish we had Devers to come in right now. That type of thing. It'll rear its head again. But for now, for the time being, and certainly until the All-Star break and also the trade deadline, which is coming up here in about a month, I think this is really the last main conversation that we're going to have in the aftermath and in the wake of this Rafael Devers trade, which happened a week ago today. Isn't that weird to think about? Doesn't it seem like he got traded a month ago? He got traded a week ago today, and not even yet. It was like 8:30, 9 o'clock at night. I can't remember exactly what time it was, but I remember going on the air and talking about it for a couple hours and impromptu after I'd already done a Sunday show. And Ken Laird, if you're listening, I'm not doing that again. I don't care who gets traded today. I'm not doing that again. Not today. But the main topic here and what I think is most important to get to isn't necessarily directly related to Devers, but it does have to do with that game yesterday. And he was important in that game. And it's not just that game yesterday. It's been building up like this for a little bit. What the Red Sox have done here over these last, since June, since the beginning of the month, really. The beginning of the month, the weekend, I guess. It was like the June 6th, I think, was when they first started their series with the Yankees. June 6th, 7th, 8th, that last weekend, 2 weekends ago. It really has just been a quick turnaround, hasn't it? They were 5 games under 500 2 weeks ago. They are now 2 games over 500, and despite the loss yesterday, still hold solely by themselves a wild card spot. Now, they're not holding on by very much. It's certainly not a stranglehold that they have over that last wild card. They're a half game up on Seattle and a half game up on Cleveland, same as yesterday before everything started. And they could very easily get bumped out of that and today or tomorrow or whenever. But I think right now, when you look at the Red Sox and you look at what they've been able to accomplish here over the last couple of weeks, you combine that with the fact that Rafael Devers got traded. You combine that with the fact that it hasn't really slowed them down all that much. Since Devers was traded, they are 3-2. And continuing to win games, continuing to win series. And they have a chance to win another series here today at 4:05. It's going to be me, then it's going to be Dan Ball, and Dan Ball is going to hand it off to Joe Weil at 3:05. And you got Red Sox baseball, so keep it right here on WEEI, needless to say. Because this is it. I think this is the final. You can talk to Dan about it, obviously, but I think for me, this is going to be the final heavily Devers-centric show. And it's not because I'm tired of talking about him, but it's because I'm starting to think that the Red Sox, with all of the things that they have going for them right now, are also showing some big-time areas for improvement. That if they could get that together and they could get that clicking as well, then I think you have a team that can challenge the Yankees in the American League East. I know I'm making a big leap here, but think about it. They were five games under 500 2 weeks ago. They're now 2 games over in the span of 2 weeks. And in that time, they are not scoring a lot of runs. They really aren't. That first series against the Yankees, they scored a lot of runs. Since then, 3-1, 4-3, 2-1, 4-3, 2-0, 2-0, lose 8-0, win 3-1. First game against San Francisco, they won 7-5. That was an offensive eruption for them. And then yesterday, 3-2, and they didn't score the two runs until the ninth inning. It's easy when you're winning to ignore some of the problems that a team is experiencing. But with this Red Sox team, I don't think you can do that. With this Red Sox team, you have to look at the big picture, because over the course of the first 2.5 months, there was always something. There was always something standing in the way. Even when it seemed like the pitching would get itself together, the bats went in the tank. When the bats would start to come to life, the bullpen would start blowing it. And then when the bullpen got its act together, the starting pitchers couldn't get out of the first inning. And this went on and on and on like this for 2 months. And it was infuriating. So I'm sorry if, while it's nice to see the team win games and it's nice to see them get back on track, I'm not going to start talking about how they won the Devers trade, or that, you know, anything really beyond the fact that this has been a nice 2 weeks. And it has. It's been a great 2 weeks. It's been a necessary 2 weeks. If they didn't have these 2 weeks, if they didn't have the success that they've had in these 2 weeks, Devers wouldn't be the only one getting traded. I'll just put it that way. If these last 2 weeks had gone the rest of the way, like if they were still 4 or 5 games under 500 right now at this point, Devers would have gotten traded, sure. But guess who else would have? You name it. You like Aroldis Chapman? You like that Aroldis Chapman, Rafael Devers at bat on Friday night, by the way? That was the highlight of my weekend. It was Thursday night. I was up until very, very late. Not Thursday night. It was Friday night. My bad. I'm up Friday night watching that game, struggling to stay awake. And the adrenaline of that game kept my eyes wide open. That game was tremendous. Drama, interpersonal beef. A longtime homegrown player who complained his way right off the team and who insulted the general manager, insulted the owner, probably insulted the manager, although we never really got full confirmation on that. I think Devers' behavior in and of itself was in some ways insulting to the manager. As in, I'm not going to listen to you. He may not have said what he said to Craig Breslow, which is, learn how to do your job, go find another first baseman, leave me alone, you jerk. That's basically what he said to him. He didn't say that to Cora, but his behavior reflected so badly on Cora and Cora's ability, or perceived ability, to manage egos on a team and level with the players and all this other stuff like that. That took a hit with this whole Devers fiasco. And the way the team had been playing, obviously, wasn't a feather in his cap either. This has been a tough year for Alex Cora. And I'm sure he knows that. I'm sure everybody around him knows that. I'm sure the team owners know that. I wonder where they are with him right now. But all that aside, that first game was awesome. That was maybe my favorite Red Sox game since 2021. I'm trying to think of a regular season game that had that kind of juice to it with these two teams. I can't think of one Red Sox-Yankee game in the last 4 years that had that same sort of juice. Not one. And I make a big deal out of those games. I still care about the Red Sox-Yankee rivalry. Even when it's not really a rivalry, I still get up for those games. I still get pumped up for those games. Since 2021, since they played in the playoffs, there has not been one Red Sox-Yankee game that has reached the level of drama, excitement, and that showdown in the ninth inning between Chapman and Devers. That was amazing. If you didn't stay up until 1 a.m. to watch it, first of all, that means you probably have like a life, which, congratulations. Unfortunately, that is not how you describe me these days. I was just happy I was able to get some peace and quiet in my house. I have to wait till 1 a.m. to get it, but hey, I'll take what I can get. At any rate, I'm there, I'm watching. And Chapman and Devers do this little nod to each other before the at-bat. That was right away. I was like, oh snap, like this is going to be pretty good. Whatever's about to happen here, I have a feeling it's going to be pretty good. And it was. It did not disappoint. If you go online, you can find like a pitch by pitch breakdown of the at bat, and it's really worth watching if you didn't see it. You know, you see the highlight of the strikeout, and that's cool, but you should take a look at the entire at bat, cuz it was great. Elliot Ramos comes up, he strikes him out. Here comes Devers, nod to each other. First pitch, sinker on the top, 99 miles an hour. Fouls it off. Next pitch, up and in, 100 miles an hour. Brushes Devers back, spins him around. No hard feelings, no nothing like that, just a high, tight pitch. Which, by the way, we were all waiting for that, weren't we? The whole game? I certainly was. I was waiting for Hunter Dobbins to put one up and in. I didn't want to see Devers get hurt or hit in the head or anything like that. But, yeah, I was ready to see someone back him off the plate. I was ready to see someone make him move his feet. That's what they always say when they're like, yeah, well, we wanted to make him move his feet. That means we wanted to throw one right under his chin. We wanted to trim his little flavor saver there. So, pitch two. It's 1-1 count. Devers has just been brushed back. Next pitch, slider. Starts way outside, comes right in over the low outside corner. Devers swings and misses. Next pitch, 101 with the heater. Devers fouls it back. Next pitch, 102. Little high, center plate, swing and a miss. Boom. And then Wilmer Flores popped up the first. But that at bat was drama. That at bat was baseball. That's baseball. You know, for all the talk about, yeah, we just want to get fans back in here, and when Fenway's rocking, it's really electric and blah, 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 and all that sort of stuff. And you can't manufacture moments like that. You know, you can't just, in a regular game, in a regular season game, you can't force a moment like that. It needs to take a lot of different factors, and all the factors were there. A Red Sox team struggling to maintain its spot in the wild card. I guess they hadn't been struggling. They've been winning. But a team that's fighting off a lot of challengers right now. A lot of teams within a half game, 1.5 games, etc. You got your best player, who you just traded away, much to the chagrin of a lot of people, including myself. Which, by the way, I want to check in on all the glad Devers is gone people. And not just them. I want to hear this morning from the people who, from the very beginning of the year, wanted Rafael Devers traded. I want to hear from you, and not because I want to yell at you, not because I think you deserve to be ridiculed. You were closer to the bone than anybody else. The people who said those things, I wasn't saying that. I wasn't saying, yeah, Devers needs to go. My thought was, this is Boston. This is the Red Sox. There have been guys on this team my entire life who were not very pleasant people and who probably, if asked to move a new position, would have told their manager and their GM and maybe even their owner, I don't know, to go bleep themselves. You know, like, I don't think that's something that's so unique to Rafael Devers. Maybe in this day and age, maybe in like the 2020s. But 20 years ago, that certainly, I don't think, would have been a crazy thing to have happen. There were some personalities in this clubhouse for a long time. Some very strong, some very unpleasant, some very stubborn. And what's interesting about Devers is that he wasn't really like that until Craig Breslow got here. You never really saw that side of Devers. Now, that doesn't mean it didn't exist, but he wasn't outward front-facing about it. He wouldn't get in front of a bunch of cameras and microphones with his translator and rip the GM, even if he really didn't think the GM was doing a good job. That just wasn't in his nature. That wasn't the way he was. He was kind of the shy kid who had a pretty upbeat personality. And seemed to be happy all the time. Seemed to really enjoy his job and enjoy being with his teammates and, you know, loved playing baseball and just seemed like a happy kid. And then that changed. It changed dramatically here. Ever since he got paid and then Craig Breslow arrived. And I wonder what kind of mentality it takes to go from being a guy on his rookie deal, going through arbitration and all that sort of stuff, to getting paid $350 million and then having that sour you on the team and the people that gave you that contract. And I really don't want this to come off like I'm saying, oh, Devers is ungrateful. Because we're a capitalist society, are we not? Rafael Devers is paid what the market will bear, and that's the way it works, and that's the way it's always worked in this country, and I don't have a problem with that, okay? And you shouldn't either. And by the way, he's earning that money. You can say, oh, yeah, he's not playing first base, not playing third base. Not $1 of that $350 million was paid to him because of his ability to play third base. No one cares. Honestly, no one cares. The Red Sox don't care. They didn't care when they paid him that money. They didn't cut the check and say, hey, in order for this to be worth it for us, you have to play third base. They moved him to DH. They're the ones who moved him. And for some reason, Devers, despite being taken care of financially for the rest of his life and his kid's life and his whole family's life, really got bent out of shape. And I think that when you cut through all the long-form pieces by Jeff Passan and Pete Abraham and Sean McAdam and Chris Cotillo and everybody who's written about it, and they've all done a bang-up job, I think, and we're going to play some clips from my interview with Jeff Passan on Friday night, later on in the show, in case you missed that. But when you cut through all of that, Devers believed that when he gets paid, or when anybody in baseball gets paid, that puts them on a level that's unquestionable. As in, you're not going to question me. You're not going to have me do something I don't want to do. You've paid me all this money. That means I am my own entity now. And I don't have to deal with moving positions or being asked to move positions like I'm some utility player. Like I'm Brock Holt over here. Oh, what? You want me to go play first base? What? If someone gets hurt, I got to play the outfield? I'm not saying I agree with this. I'm not saying that I think this is the right way to go about it. But I think that it's pretty clear that that or some variation of that mentality is exactly what caused this whole thing with Devers. That's what caused it. The idea that, hey, you guys just made this big commitment to me, and now you're treating me like a utility guy. And that's, you paid me to be the slugger, you paid me to be the superstar, you paid me to come and do all these things, which I'm doing, by the way. And now you want to treat me like I'm Tim Nehring, you know? No offense to Tim Nehring, if you're listening. Was Tim Nehring even a utility guy? David, can you look that up? I feel like he played all over the infield. That's Nehring, N-A-E-A-R-I-N-G. Yeah, look that up and tell me where he played in his career. Now that, Rich Keefe, if you're listening, there's a random baseball player for you. Old Tim Nehring. Whatever happened to him? 617-779-7937 is the phone number. We'll keep the phone lines open here because, as I said, this is the last time with me anyway. I don't know what Dan Ball's going to do. This is the last time with me. These next 2-plus hours will be the last time that I am going to hold a very serious, upfront, and candid conversation about Rafael Devers, this trade, and everything else. Because once this team leaves San Francisco, and once they head out for the rest of their road trip, they got 3 with Anaheim, and then they're back for 6 at Fenway. The page will be turned, one way or another. We'll revisit it, of course. But in terms of this story being the story, it was 1 week ago today, 1 week ago today, that Rafael Devers was traded for nothing. And I still maintain that the return from this trade, whether you think Devers should be here or not, whether you think Devers was worth that money or not, whatever you think, no one should be happy with the return that the Red Sox got on this trade. That part of it is and remains unforgivable. That part of it, I think, even if these prospects end up turning into something, unless they turn into something as good as or better than Rafael Devers, I don't want to hear it. And I think the odds of that are very, very slim. And I think that eventually, if this team keeps playing the way that they have been offensively, which is to say, not very good, this is a nice streak that they're on right here, right now. They're doing it in spite of the offense going in the toilet. And we'll dive back into that, and just that, not into the toilet, but we will dive back into that topic and just how dire things are looking at the plate right now. It's nice to be winning games, but after watching this team for 2 months scuffle and various things pop up that seemed like they were easy fixes, I'm not going to sit here and ignore the fact that the offense has disappeared. Because eventually the starting pitching is going to revert back to the mean a little bit, I think. You already saw it a little bit there with Dobbins the other day. You saw it with Buehler again. You're starting to see it, okay? I think we can all still count on Garrett Crochet. I don't know if we can all still count on Lucas Giolito. And oh, by the way, Cutter Crawford may be done for the year. They've paused his rehab. The wrist is really bothering him. He's not coming along the way they want. So if you were expecting those reinforcements to come in with him and Tanner Houck and everybody else, it may not be that simple. And in some cases, it may not be that at all. So with that being said, not to sound the alarm here, but this is a pretty big game. This game for the Red Sox, pretty big game. You win this series, great. You lose it, you go on to Anaheim, a team that took 2 out of 3 from you last week. 2 weeks ago, I guess. It was right before this long stretch with the Yankees twice and the Rays and everything else. Then all of a sudden, the excitement and the adrenaline of the win streak and the Devers trade and all that wears off, and what are you? You're a team that's not as good as you were a week ago. At least not on paper. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. We'll get to your phone calls here in just a moment, as I see a lot of you lining up already to talk about this. And I certainly want to get all the thoughts that we have out in the public, out in the ether. And we'll see what this series ends up looking like at the end. We'll see what the rest of the season looks like. And more importantly, in a couple of weeks when the All-Star break gets here, and these teams start really deciding what they're going to do with the trade deadline. We're going to talk a lot of trade deadline today too, folks, because even if you like the way this team looks now, they're going to have to make some reinforcements if they want to make a real push. If they don't just want to be a wild card team who's one and done, if they want to really establish themselves here and make a deep playoff run, this isn't going to cut it. 617-779-7937 is your phone number. Here's David Azier. He'll get you caught up on what's trending. And when we come back, we will continue with our Red Sox conversation, including Devers' new attitude. Because he's got a new attitude now, doesn't he? He's really changed his mind on a lot of big topics that seemed like they were the type of topics that would really cause an impasse in his relationship with the Red Sox. We'll get to that next. Here's David.
Now, broadcasting from the pulpit of sports radio in Boston, it's Sunday Mass with Christian Arcan on WEEI.
It's Rafael Devers with his translator after the game yesterday. Christian Arcan here. It's Sunday Mass, Reverend Arcan. We're here till 1 o'clock, then we'll hand things over to Dan Ball. He'll take you up until Red Sox baseball, so don't touch the dial. Leave it right here all day long on WEEI. Devers homered yesterday, which I kind of glossed over as I was talking about the game on Friday night. That game on Friday night, I almost went on the air after that. It was like 2 in the morning. I almost went on after that anyway. I was just going to do it, not even tell Ken. Just start talking about how awesome that at-bat was. I was ready. I was wired after that game. Yesterday, not so much. Yesterday, really not so much at all. In fact, yesterday's game was kind of a wet fart of a follow-up, wasn't it? Logan Roop, he was awesome. They couldn't really do much against him. Three hits, three walks, struck out a bunch of batters. Really had that slider going. His slider is really tough. Only 77 miles an hour, but boy, does it snap right in that zone. And the Red Sox couldn't do anything with it. It wasn't until the ninth inning that Boston even got on the board. And that was against Doble, their closer. Willy Abreu had an RBI single. Trevor Story scored on a throwing error as Nate Eaton was stealing second base, I think. And that was it. Bayo pitched pretty well. He gave up a run in the first. Elliot Ramos hit a bomb. And then in the third inning, you heard it there in the open of the show, Rafael Devers got all of a fastball and hit it the same place he's hit so many home runs at Fenway Park, left center field, opposite way, and watching that ball carry on out of the park. He almost hit one in the first game. It kind of died out on the track, and I think Rafaela caught it, but I remember seeing that and going, ooh, yeah, if he squares that up a little bit, he barrels that one a little bit more, that thing's out of here. And that's exactly what you saw in that game yesterday. And it was fitting. It was kind of fitting to see Devers, that crowd, his new... Because when Mookie got traded and when Xander Bogaerts went to the Padres, there wasn't much animus. Mookie Betts, there was no animus there at all. He kept things very cordial. He kept things very professional. There was no blow-ups where he talked about not wanting to move to different positions, which he did, by the way. He moved from the infield to the outfield, all around the outfield. He did whatever, and he did it very well. He was a gold glover in all different positions, gold glove caliber anyway. Rafael Devers, not so much. And I wonder if that plays a role in it, too. Everyone's like, oh, he's just got such a bad attitude. I wonder if part of it was just insecurity. Like, I am not very good in the field, and you're asking me to move all around? That does kind of blow up, though, because he didn't want a DH. If you're insecure about it, I understand maybe being defensive, but I got to learn a new position. No, actually, Rafi, you don't. Being a DH is not learning a new position. All you have to learn how to do is make sure you get up there for your at-bat on time, that you're not eating cupcakes in the clubhouse too long or whatever. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. Let's go ahead and start with the phone calls. We'll go with Vincent in the car. He's been waiting the longest. Go ahead, Vincent.
Hey, Christian. First and foremost, this was a salary dump, but also I think it ties into something a little bit more deeper. I think this contract, if you ask ownership group, I don't think they ever wanted to give this contract. I think it was an overcorrection for how they blundered the Betts contract and the Bogaerts contract, just like how David Price was signed to that 217 deal when they blundered Lester. But also I don't think they ever wanted to pay a DH strictly to hit $30 million a year, and I think they looked for the first avenue to get out of the contract. which is what they did, which is I'm completely fine with. But I think it goes into the business model, probably what's to come with how Fenway Sports Group owns so many different teams. I think they're going to put a value or a price tag per position, and I don't think they're going to try to overspend on that. That way they can, you know, allocate more money to whether it's the soccer team, the hockey team, and if they get an NBA team. I think this is just what's going to be the business model moving forward, but I don't think they ever wanted to spend $300 million on a DH, and I think the second he became DH, I think they wanted to get out of this deal as fast as possible.
Yeah, Vincent, you're probably right. Thanks for the call. Good stuff. Appreciate you checking in. And I think that on some level you're right, all the way back to the beginning and the genesis of the deal, which if you read Jeff Passan, and I asked him about this, there were some high-ranking executives with the Red Sox who really didn't want to give Devers this contract. I don't know where they were with Mookie, but they said, no, we don't want to do this with Devers, and they got overruled, and they got overruled by ownership. Now, you can say ownership didn't think that Devers was going to not be a great infielder or that he'd eventually become a DH. I think everybody in the world, from the first day Devers got here when he was a 17-year-old kid, looked at him and said, yeah, this kid will probably be a DH someday. Like, you know, he just has that kind of look. He looks like a DH. He plays third base like a DH. Although, in fairness, no one ever says this. I'll say it. In fairness, the last 2 years of him playing third base, he got a lot better. His fielding percentage got better. He still had errors. But if you look at the totality of his range factor and all the other stats that make up what a good defensive player in baseball is, outside of errors, and I know errors are a big one, but if you look at the rest of it, there were improvements. There were certainly improvements in last year and even the year before. It wasn't quite as bad. The error numbers don't change, but the rest of it had been improving. So when he goes and he says things like, you know, I've really been working on my play at third base, it's true. He did get better, but not good enough. Not good enough to keep the job. Certainly not good enough to keep the job over Alex Bregman when they brought in a gold glove third baseman. And that was the beginning. But that whole thing, there was a lot of people in the building who, even after losing Betts and Bogarts, said, nah, we shouldn't do this either. We should let them all go. We shouldn't overspend on any of them. And I hear that, and I just think, man, John Henry had to be the one to say, guys, wait, we can't just let them all go. John Henry. Or Tom Moore, whoever it was. I don't know. I couldn't tell you. It sounds like it was John Henry who looked at the optics of that and said, wait a minute. We can't let them all go. This was our whole future. It was 5 years ago, 4 years ago. This was the future of the team. And now that future's going to be, that's it? We got to keep one of these guys. And Devers was the guy who was the youngest, and he was the guy who was left. In retrospect, it was bungled. Him being the guy out of those three, really added between him and Mookie. If it's between him and Xander Bogaerts, I think I'd probably stick with Devers. Because if you look at what Bogaerts is doing these days in San Diego, they are not happy with him. Conversely, in the last 3 years, Bogaerts has done considerably better than Trevor Story. So I guess, you know, sort of six of one, half dozen of the other. Only problem is he's signed for like 8 more years. At any rate, back to Devers. Think about how out of touch the front office and everybody has to be for John freaking Henry, to be the guy to say, guys, we can't do that. We're going to lose everything. We're going to lose all our fans. No one's going to come watch. If we let him go too, if we don't extend him, Mookie's gone, Xander's gone, Devers is going to be gone too. We can't. We cannot. I don't like signing checks like this, but I'll do it today. Now go out there and go call him up and tell him he's going to be a Red Sox for life. Or maybe for 2 years until he starts being an a-hole and then we trade him. But either way, tell him we're gonna make sure he never has to take out a loan at the bank ever again. And obviously it didn't work out. But I can't help but wonder, who are these other people who didn't think that would be a big deal? Who are these executives? Even if you thought that Devers' contract wasn't going to age well. No contract in baseball ages well, by the way. That's such a universal truth. I get so annoyed when people say that. Oh, well, yeah, but then you get the last 5 years and they're not going to be any good. Right, of course. You're paying for the first five. When you sign a guy to a big contract, you're paying for the first 3, 4, 5 years. That's it. Especially if it's one of these long baseball contracts, like 10, 13 years, 12 years, $500 million, whatever it is, if you're paying for that, you are going for those first 3 to 4 years. Those are the years you're paying for. Those are the years that you're getting your ROI. And you hope that it's going to be good enough to float the rest of them. Because, yeah, generally, those contracts on the back end don't look great. But that's the way it is. That's how you play the game. That's how you operate as a big market team, which is exactly what the Red Sox are. And another thing Passan said, which I thought was so true, is that if you're a big market team like the Red Sox and you're not flexing your money muscles around, then what? That's a huge advantage that you have that you're not using. That's an unforced error. And the Red Sox have been doing that for about 10 years now. Maybe not 10 years, but certainly since Dombrowski got fired, which is closer to 6 years ago. Still, you give up that advantage that you have. You give up that one thing that makes you different from the mid-market to low-level clubs who never spend on their team and whose fans have all but abandoned them. You see these empty ballparks every day. Fans basically looking to the ownership group and saying, well, what do you want from us? You're not going to invest in the team. We're not going to invest in the team. And that happens. Now, listen, this is Boston, okay? It's not Denver. It's not, south side of Chicago. It's not, you name it. It's not some place where people don't show up. I'm going to check what the attendance records are right now. I imagine they're not very good in a lot of places. Let's take a look at what's going on in Major League Baseball attendance-wise. You know how many fans the A's are drawing? 9,710 fans per game. The Tampa Bay Rays, 9,836. Now, in fairness, those two teams are playing in Little League ballparks. The Marlins, 11,000. Chicago White Sox, 16. Pittsburgh, 17. You notice something in common with all those teams? They're small market teams whose owners could give a rat's ass about the fans. Oh, you want us to sign this guy? You know we're not going to be in on him. Minnesota, Kansas City, Cleveland, Baltimore, Cincinnati, Washington, etc. You get up to Seattle, it starts to shift. Detroit, Milwaukee, all right. And some of these are based on how big the ballpark is. But that, I think, is an important factor to consider here. You start behaving like a small market team to the point where you're getting rid of all, you're doing what the Marlins used to do. The Marlins would win the World Series, trade all their players. You're not even winning World Series anymore. You're just getting good players and moving on from them for personal reasons, money reasons, money reasons that shouldn't affect you in the least. And yet here we are, 617-779-7937. Let's try Eric in Texas. Go ahead, Eric.
Hey, Christian, thanks for taking the call.
You got it.
Just to connect you and I, I'm a Mizzou grad, so I'm a Big 12 guy, just like you probably.
There you go.
So a couple things. I did want to trade Devers probably in the first 2 weeks of the season. I wasn't there during spring training because I thought it could work itself out. But when I saw his performance at the plate and how the team was responding, I felt like it was time to move on quickly. So I don't hate what we did. I know it was a money, a cash drop. Hopefully we reinvest, though none of us probably feel like it will be. I do have a question for you.
Shoot.
When Bregman comes back, do you consider a Bregman at third, Marcelo at short, and move Story over to second? Is that a way to keep Meyer back up in there and active and basically ring the bell on we are moving forward with the youngster plan? Is that one way to do that?
That is one way to do it, yeah. I think so, Eric, and thanks for the call. The other way is what was considered, and I think almost the plan this year, and if it had been, who knows where we'd be right now, but Bregman playing second. That was an original, like when they were breaking a camp, that was one thing that they thought about. Well, if we put Bregman at second and leave Devers at third, then we can DH Yoshida, or we can bring up Anthony and DH him, or whatever. We'll be flexible at DH, and that would have meant no Christian Campbell, which in retrospect... You know, maybe that's not the worst idea either. Not that Christian Campbell shouldn't be on the team, but maybe they got a little too excited about the Christian Campbell experience, and then, we saw he had to send him back down to Worcester. And I hope that he gets his act together down there. I hope he's back up contributing with the team very, very soon. You know me, I love athletes named Christian, even when it's Christian with a K. Those, the Danish Christian. Even if it's like that, I still root for you. So I hope that he's able to do that, but that, I think, would make more sense than Story to second. Or Meyer to second. I think you leave Meyer at third, you leave Story at short, and put Bregman at second base and see how that goes. Now, I don't know if Story's played much second. I'll go and check. But just based on sort of their on-field abilities right now, Story's pretty good at shortstop. But I feel like Bregman's the type of infielder who could move around a little easier, and I'd feel more comfortable with that than I would with Meyer or I would with Story. So if it was up to me, that's the way I'd go. But I'm sure they're looking at all possible avenues. 617-779-7937 is your phone number. We'll continue with your phone calls in just a moment. And also, what's riding on this season? I just touched on it a little bit, telling you about those small market teams. What's riding on this season? And are fans fed up with this team? If you're fed up with the Red Sox, I'll put you to the front of the line. 617-779-7937. Maybe I will. Maybe I won't. I don't know. But I feel like we're at a inflection point here. Devers gets traded. You keep winning. That's okay. Devers gets traded. You fall off again. You have another swoon after the deadline like you've had for the last couple of years. I wonder if maybe you're going to lose some fans permanently. 617-779-7937. We'll be right back.
Now, broadcasting from the pulpit of sports radio in Boston, it's Sunday Mass with Christian Arcand on WEEI.
And where I think the biggest missed opportunity for the Red Sox is right now, we've seen this with the Dodgers. We've seen this with the Mets. We've seen this with the Yankees, Christian. And we have seen it in the past with the Boston Red Sox. In an uncapped sport like Major League Baseball, perhaps the greatest advantage is the payroll advantage that large market teams have. And for the Boston Red Sox not to be utilizing that and leveraging that in every way possible is just giving away the biggest advantage that they have.
Sure is. Amen, Jeff Passan. It's Christian Arcand here. Sunday Mass. Nice to have you with us here today. If you want to call in, it's 617-779-7937. That's your phone number. If you're texting the show, I got bad news. I can't see the text line where I am. So if you're texting me right now, I do not know what you're saying. You can say anything. You can say anything you want. I will not see it. But I will say that what Jeff Passan said right there is 100% right. And it is a philosophy that has gotten people, I think, more and more disillusioned with the Red Sox every year for the past 7 years. Or maybe the last 5 years, with Betts really being the inflection point. I was saying seven because that's when they won the World Series, but even in 2019, they had a bad follow-up to that great year. And then Dombrowski gets fired. Chaim Bloom comes in. Chaim Bloom gets tasked with trading Mookie Betts. And not only did that make it impossible for anything he did after that to ever be looked at objectively, it also let Red Sox fans know that while, yeah, 2018 was nice and all, and yeah, Mookie Betts was a great player and all, nothing is really ever going to top our priority of running a successful business and expanding our business and the Fenway Sports Group becoming this big thing. And look around. I mean, there's people all over the country that are trying to copy Fenway Sports Group. In their space, they are leaders. In their space, they're innovators. You read this in Passan's piece as well. Front office executives all over the league saw the Red Sox traded Devers, got a team to take all his money, and said, wow, what a great deal that is. I can't believe the Red Sox pulled it off. What a tremendous, tremendous maneuver that was to get another team to take $300 million, whatever it is that's left on it, $250 million. I can't believe that. Look at that. And that, I think, is the main disconnect here between what baseball is and what the customers of baseball want. What baseball is now, not everywhere, but in Boston anyway, is different. And once you give fans, and it's been 20 years, but once you give fans a taste of what it's like to go all out to win, to do anything it takes to knock off the Yankees and break the curse and do all that stuff, fans grow accustomed to it. And then three more championships happened after that. And while I don't expect there to be a race for Curt Schilling and signing Manny Ramirez, you know, all these things that they've done over the year, while I don't necessarily expect signing David Price, like the Texans, trading for Chris Sale, all those things. You can't do that every single year. but you also can't have years where it seems like the priority is just reset, save money, stock up the farm system, and play it, pay it on forward. Sorry, fans who were really excited about this season. That's not our priority right now. You can't keep telling your fans over and over and over that the thing that they're watching that day isn't the priority. And it's been going on now for 5 years. And that, to me, is just, I hear that. I wonder about that. I wonder how many lifelong fan. I'm basing this off of the phone calls that we take here on this program and on my show at night, and that I hear all throughout the day with Hillman, with Jones and Keefe, and with WEEI Afternoons with Fitzy and Andy and Ted. You know how many calls have come out? I'm done. I'm done with this team. And it's not coming from people my age and younger. I'm in my 40s. I'm not hearing it from people in their 20s and their 30s. I'm hearing it from the old-timey bunt brigade. No offense, guys. That's who I'm hearing it from. The people who call in and tell you how old they are before they even start their call. You know who I'm talking about. They call, I'm 75 years old. I've been watching the Red Sox for 58 years ever since blah, blah, blah. I watched Harry Hooper. Like, I didn't watch Harry Hooper, but you know what I mean. We all know those calls. I love those calls, by the way. You guys, you call in any time. I take those calls after Red Sox games all the time. You guys stay up late. But those are the ones, the lifelong fans. And it's not, they're not getting out because they don't like the way the game is now. Ah, everybody's too much into this, too much into that. No one does this anymore. They're all upset that no one bunts anymore, but they still watch. It's not that. I hear basketball fans all the time, I can't even watch the game anymore. They just shoot threes and they, you know, do this and that. Fine, you know, the old timey, but this is different. It's not that kind of anger. It's not that kind of resignation. It's these guys don't care. Not these players. These guys in charge. They don't appear to care. And when they do care about something, it's not in line with what the fans care about. Fans didn't care about Rafael Devers' money. No, why would they care about that? How could they possibly care about that? If you were going to trade Rafael Devers and you got back a good player, you got back when they traded Manny and got Jason Bay. No one liked that they traded Manny, but Jason Bay was really good. Jason Bay was a power hitting replacement that you could put in the lineup, a right-handed bat, and say, well, he's not Manny, but this guy's pretty good. They didn't keep him, but you know what I mean. That softened the blow a lot. You trade your best power hitter, and the return is two guys in rookie ball, a triple-A starter, and a late-inning reliever who pitched himself out of the rotation this year. And you expect what? Fans are going to be psyched? Fans are going to say, hey, great deal there, guys. Way to go. And hey, you got rid of all the money? That's awesome. That's more important than the players. Of course not. Why would anyone think that? 617-779-7937 is the phone number. We'll continue with your phone calls here in just a moment, but I want to take a quick break from the Red Sox, because there is a Game 7 tonight in the NBA Finals. And there's also, I think, a real crisis happening in the NBA right now. We'll get to that. If you want to chime in on that, I'll continue with your Red Sox phone calls as well. You want to talk Devers? You want to talk about the Devers smear campaign? We'll get to that later on in the program as well, as I believe the smear campaign is officially on, and you've already seen in the last couple of days here some of the stories that have come out, some attempts to make Devers look like he was more of a problem than maybe he actually was, which I don't even think you need to do with this. Devers made his bed here. Devers made all these statements. There's no need to continue with the smear campaign. Everyone who's mad at Devers has a good right reason to be. Anyway, we're going to pause on the Red Sox, pause on Devers for just a moment, get to some NBA stuff. I got some Celtics rumors and predictions as well. The Desmond Bane trade to Orlando, which is now being called a ripple effect from the Jason Tatum injury. We'll get to all of that, do a little basketball here, NBA Finals, Celtics, and more right after this.